Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, we remember yet another moon voyager who has departed this mortal coil. So first up, we're going to have Space Show News. Late last week, NASA announced that former astronaut Frank Borman had died on November the 7th at the age of 95. Frank made two space missions. The first was the 14-day Gemini 7 in Earth orbit. The second was the first manned flight to orbit the moon aboard Apollo 8. During the 1965 December Gemini 7 mission, he and fellow astronaut James Lovell circled the Earth 206 times, setting a new world endurance spaceflight record. Partway through the flight, Gemini 6A was launched with Walter Schirra and Thomas Stafford. They rendezvoused with Gemini 7, coming within a metre of each other. Now, during 1966 March, Frank Borman and Wally Schirra toured Australia and New Zealand. In Wellington, the two were interviewed for the NZBC's national radio program. Now, I've edited this 10-minute interview to leave only Frank Borman's comments.
Science 30. Is it possible to gauge distance visually in a space rendezvous? This is one of the questions the American astronauts Walter Schirra and Frank Borman discussed with Peter Reed in Wellington last night. Captain Schirra and Colonel Borman commanded the Gemini 6 and 7 spacecraft during the historic space rendezvous on December the 15th last year. After that rendezvous, Colonel Borman and James Lovell went on in Gemini 7 to complete 14 days in space, travelling over 500,000 miles. Now, Peter Reed puts his first question.
Well, I was in the second group of astronauts into the program, and I applied after a rather calculated effort to qualify, to achieve the qualifications that were required. So I, came after Wally 2 or 3 years, and I was looking forward to it.
Gentlemen, may I ask you collectively, we have for many years been treated to a series of science fiction films, and in those films there was always the blast-off sequence of the then astronauts of the future. And we always saw these characters with their faces stretched out like rubber bands, grunting in agony against the G's pressure. What is the truth behind all this? Do you suffer complete discomfort at time of liftoff, or are you able to move?
Well, Wally, and you just used the correct term. Wally and I try to correct everyone when they use the term blast-off. We like lift-off rather than blast-off. But actually, it's a very smooth, almost imperceptible motion as you take off or lift off. And as you do proceed through the launch phase, the thrust of the rocket remains the same, and of course the weight gets smaller because of the fuel is being used. And you do pick up accelerations in this manner, eyeballs in, and it does get a little difficult to breathe at two stages of the launch, but it's certainly nothing really exciting or anything that that approaches the horrendous things I've seen also in science fiction.
I see. Yes, yeah, so your flight, Colonel Bourne, would be equivalent to a moon trip, wouldn't it, in time?
Well, actually, it would be equivalent to the longest moon trip that we've projected to date. The nominal one will be around 8 days.
Oh. Now, in your flight, you had some 20 experiments to perform, I understand.
That's correct.
Including stellar navigation.
Well, we were evaluating a sextant. I wouldn't say it was stellar navigation as such, but we were trying to determine the usefulness of this instrument for future applications.
And I understand also you were determining position by timing occultations behind the limb of the Earth.
Again, we were using...
You must be one of the first men that has actually seen Earth occultations. Was there much dimming to the star?
Well, yes, the star. You see, the problem that you have is there's an air glow layer. And so you have two or three different horizons. Mm. And it's difficult to... the scientists are trying to determine exactly the proper distance above the Earth, the actual horizon, of these air glow layers.
Yes.
Consequently, we were trying to determine for them the height of the air glow layers by timing the star's occultation as it went through the various layers.
What equipment did you use for that?
Well, we had a very sensitive light meter on board, and then we also used the sextant.
I see. In the case of a lunar landing, I read recently somewhere of the possibility of monitoring the sun with a string of observatories around the Earth in the case of solar flares.
That's right.
In the case of a flare on the sun, would your space vehicles be able to stop radiation, any of the dangerous...
It's one of the design criteria for Apollo, and the reason we're very anxious to have these flares predicted is so that we can take protective cover.
Mm.
We wouldn't be wearing or utilizing this protection except in the event of a solar flare, and then we, of course, would retreat to safety or else put on a garment that would provide the protection.
I see.
And again, depending on the magnitude of the flare and the prediction time we have, we may have to hurry back home.
Yes.
This would be a tremendous dose, as you can imagine.
How long do you think the present techniques will last? For instance, would the Gemini or Apollo, say, be able to do not only a lunar trip, but possibly a planetary trip? Or would there be further breakthroughs?
I don't think either one of those would make it to a planet. No, we have to... First of all, we need a new propulsion system, or at least a better propulsion system, and then, of course, we're going to need a more life support capability than we have in either of those vehicles.
Thank you, Bill Bowman.
The American astronauts Walter Schirra and Frank Borman were talking to Peter Reed in Wellington. Science Service is broadcast each Tuesday evening after the 9 o'clock news.
After their visit...
The time is 9:20.
After their visit to Wellington, Borman and Schirra flew to Auckland, where I saw them three times. The following day, I recorded my impression of the experience on my homemade kitset reel-to-reel tape recorder.
This is Andrew Rooney reporting on the visit of the US astronauts Walter Schirra and Frank Borman to Auckland. The pair arrived in Auckland yesterday, the 15th of March, 1966, at 5:30 p.m., and after being welcomed at the new Mangere Airport, the astronauts drove across the city and the harbour bridge to the Mondesir Hotel in Takapuna. Awaiting them there were myself and about 20 others. After acknowledging several hearty cheers and signing a girl's autograph book, the astronauts, accompanied by their wives and the US Ambassador to New Zealand, Mr. Herbert Powell, entered the hotel. This morning they left their hotel for Auckland, passing many people in Takapuna. One of them was Joyce Rennie. Joyce, would you describe for me the passage of the astronauts along Hurstmere Road?
Yes, certainly. Well, they left the Mondesir at approximately 9:15, and they came very slowly along the road with a traffic officer first, and then the two in the open car sitting on the hood. And they waved, and Mrs. Thompson and Miss Smith and I were out there watching them, and Mrs. Thompson yelled out to them, brave boys, and one of them, I don't know which one, turned round and acknowledged her. And then they drove along, right along Hurstmere Road to Hall's Corner, and I don't know where they went from there.
About how many people would you say were along Hurstmere Road watching?
Oh, I wouldn't like to say a couple of hundred perhaps, but more. And a lot of school children.
A lot of school children, right. Which school did they come from?
Well, one would be from Takapuna Primary and Carmel College.
Oh, yes, thank you. The astronauts, after Hurstmere Road, drove along Lake Road and then Desmond Road and across the Harbour Bridge to the University of Auckland. At the University of Auckland were a large number of students at the entrance to the varsity waiting for the astronauts to come there. Gave them a bit of a rousing welcome as they arrived, and the astronauts went into the varsity hall and addressed a large scientific gathering there. This gathering lasted about 1.5 hours, and when they showed films of their space rendezvous and described their orbital technique, rendezvous, re-entry to the Earth's atmosphere, how they set it up, disposal of waste materials, some of the experiments they did on board spacecraft, and various other things. Only invited guests were supposed to come there, but fortunately I was able to slip my way in past the guards and was able to hear this lecture. On their way into the lecture, they passed myself, who was busily photographing them, and the second of the two, Frank Borman, said good morning to me, and I cheerily replied good morning back to him. When they came out, I was able to come out before them, and went outside and took some more photographs of Walter Schirra. And as he came past, he gave me a special wave, and I took a good photograph of it. Following the university, the astronauts went to the government house, where they had lunch, where they had morning tea with the Governor-General. And then about 12:30, the astronauts drove up Queen Street, where a crowd of about 30,000, as you heard in the previous news review item, cheered them on. And then they went to the town hall, where there were a large number of school children and members of the public waiting to give them a welcome. This official welcome lasted about 3/4 of an hour until the two astronauts with the mayor and the mayoral party left the hall and went into the chambers where they had lunch with the mayor and the city fathers. Meanwhile, the remainder of the audience watched a film on the Gemini rendezvous and of the launchings of Gemini 6 and 7. These films were quite spectacular and lasted until just before 2 o'clock. Immediately following the end of these films, I went outside and awaited the exit of the astronauts from the council chambers. This occurred at about 2:15, and the astronauts climbed into their cars with their wives and drove off. As they drove off, the public was able to get very close to the two astronauts, within a foot or two, and they were extremely friendly. They waved goodbye and said goodbye, and the public heartily reciprocated this action. The two astronauts are leaving shortly for Fiji on their way back to the United States, and we wish them well.
Now, Frank Borman commanded the first human mission to orbit the moon in 1968, December. The six-day mission with Jim Lovell and Bill Anders made 10 lunar orbits. It was from Apollo 8 that the most famous Earthrise photograph was taken and the Bible Genesis reading was made. Here now is Apollo 7 astronaut Walter Cunningham describing Frank Borman.
Frank Borman is a man capable of success in whatever he attempts. He is a doer and a born leader, but he can be an imperious martinet to those who work for him. He seemed to glow. He wore the smug look of one who knows he will be the anointed one to do it, whatever it may be. In many ways, he was like Wally Schirra, but smarter and more effective in pursuing his objectives. He made decisions quickly and rationally.
Now, in case you're wondering or asking, of the 12 men who walked on the moon, 4 are still alive. They are 93-year-old Buzz Aldrin from Apollo 11, 91-year-old David Scott from Apollo 15, 88-year-old Charlie Duke from Apollo 16, and 88-year-old Harrison Schmitt from Apollo 17. And of those, I have interviewed 3. Now, of those who flew to the moon but did not land on it, 4 are still alive. They are 95-year-old Jim Lovell, who flew twice to the moon, Apollo 8 and Apollo 13. Bill Anders, who's now 90 years old, from Apollo 8. 93-year-old Tom Stafford from Apollo 10. And 89-year-old Fred Hayes from Apollo 13. And of those, Fred Hayes has been interviewed here by The Space Show.